This segment is brought to you courtesy of Caribbean American Weekly, a newspaper owned and operated by Caribbean Americans. Read the latest edition at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To like us on Facebook, to advertise or to subscribe, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To advertise with the Caribbean American Weekly publication, for freelance assignments, to distribute at your business place, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. Or to meet a marketing representative at our office, call 718-771-0988. That's 718-771-0988. A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by a very, very special guest, Ms. Diana Reno, who is the candidate for Lieutenant Governor of New York. Welcome. So good to have you here with us.
Hello, Pearl. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here with you. My name is Diana Reina, and I'm running for Lieutenant Governor of New York.
The same here. So tell us, Ms. Reina, why are you running for the Lieutenant Governor of New York, and what qualities set you apart from your competitors and qualify you for this position?
Pearl, I'm running, re-entering politics because I stepped away after 22 years in government, having served in the city council for 12 years, served as the deputy borough president for Eric when he was borough president. Mm-hmm. It was important to me to see the New York that I need to have for my children, for your children, for our families. The opportunity to be able to run with Tom Suozzi as the governor candidate, the opportunity to be able to provide New York with leadership, proven leadership. I have the executive skills. I have the legislative skills that it requires for our state to be redirected into path forward. We have out of control crime, public safety. People don't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. Their own neighbors, law enforcement, government, you know, where do we turn? The Washington Post considers New York State to be the most corrupt state in the United States. How did we get here? And people deserve better.
We do. So talking about people deserve better, what is your vision for New York? And I know that you touched on some of the issues, but what are the issues that you feel are most important right mm-hmm. now and that you're mm-hmm. running your campaign on?
Absolutely. We have to address public safety, not because I'm saying so, but because that is exactly what we've been hearing. We have hosted, Tom and I, these Teleton Hall meetings where we engage voters on the phone. Upwards of 5,000 people get on a phone call, and we spend an hour talking with people. As quickly as we can, we engage them with questions, and over again, public safety comes up. Mm-hmm. This issue on bail reform, it's not to undo bail reform, it's to fix where it needs fixing. We cannot be too proud to say we did something wrong. We have to go back, and we have to try to understand where the fix is necessary. We need to provide judges what is the opportunity to be able to look at history when they're reviewing cases before them, not this catch and release effort. There are certain crimes that were left out that we have to revisit back into the bail reform law. The issue of working with our chief administrative judge to be able to overlook or have oversight over the caseload that judges have, looking into what is happening on the ground. We need to have more training so that there is less implicit bias, right? Working with law enforcement, working with judges, working with our DAs, our prosecutors, right? This isn't the job for one person, one leader. This requires all of us, including the public. If the public is not invested, we cannot address public safety. I am sure that when something happens, there is more commotion on social media, and you could solve a crime because people know exactly what happened at what time mm-hmm. and where. because they're reporting it out of their own social media handles. The opportunity to be able to address affordability in our state. There's 300,000 people that left New York just last year alone. And when people leave, it's because something's wrong. And it's not just because of the pandemic. Since 1957, we had 45 congressional districts in the state of New York. Today, we have 27 congressional districts. We are losing one more. We're down to 26 congressional districts. Pearl, when we lose congressional districts, we lose funding, federal funding. And we have a $220 billion state budget. The numbers don't add up. If we have less people, that means our taxes are going to continue to go sky high. More sales tax, higher sales tax, higher gasoline tax, higher electricity bills. These taxes are driving New York out. The middle class, the poor are just being squeezed into communities. We have to do better about the affordability crisis that we're experiencing in New York. Our pension retirees are suffering the most because they're land rich and income poor. We're not investing in what would be the wealth gap. Ownership, owning something in New York is very important to families. And being able to provide them what is that home ownership opportunity requires an affordability conversation. And the last is the education. Education is in a crisis. We're not talking about education that lost 2 years because of the pandemic. Before the pandemic, we had 66% of students leaving college and not finishing with debt. We have what is two-year gap because of the pandemic, and prior to that, they already were experiencing a two-year gap in education. Our educational content is not aligned with where our children need to be. We have to fix our troubled schools. And just yesterday, I was speaking with a young teacher who graduated with a physics and education degree. She was teaching in a school called Ascend High School in Brooklyn. The same student bit that teacher twice. Bit in high school. The classroom was set on fire. What is going on? And charter schools were supposed to be the answer to better schools. We are not receiving what is the education that our children need. And when we fail our kids, then those are the kids that end up becoming the statistics of crime. So there's a correlation here.
There is.
We have to build an education system that will provide them career skills. We have to invest in prevention and intervention programs in the schools. We have to advance our curriculum and support what are those kids that need extra help with tutoring. Families that can't afford private tutoring, where do they go? Why are our teachers not being offered, our good teachers that are qualified, advanced with extra degrees for AP courses, right? You go to a school that doesn't offer advanced programming, that's a problem. Because then that means that the kids are not raising to the expectation of where a career is going to be expecting them to be. These are all issues that we have heard from New Yorkers. Tom and I have spoken with families. People want to see more parental representation in the PEPs, which is the parent educational plan, and the opportunity to be able to panel, rather, the opportunities to be able to ensure that there's an investment in career technical education plans, right? The schools that teach CTE, so that they graduate with the possibilities at 18 to receive a six-figure job because it's a skill trade. And we're not investing in that type of education anymore. There was once upon a time where we saw in schools, high school students would graduate not just with a high school degree, but certification, a driver's license, the opportunity to receive a CPR certification, right? Like there's so much that we're not investing.
This education is education.
Absolutely.
So speaking about the education system, New York's education system has been the most segregated in the country for the past decade. What are your concerns? And I know you expressed some for parents who don't have a voice, and some of your recommendations in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So we have schools that tend to, when I was a council member, we had an influx of new families that were moving in to our neighborhood, but weren't enrolling their kids in our local schools. We saw a decline of 50% enrollment. Schools that had 1,000 kids were now at 500, 400, 300. The opportunities to be able to improve those schools started to shift the interest of the school. And then we started to see a more integrated school. But you cannot address the racial and ethnic segregation issues we have if we're not improving our schools. Because the schools that are segregated, that are doing well, parents are going to flock to that school. And when we have zone schools, right, where schools are protected so that others don't enter, it becomes a problem.
So do you think open enrollment is the answer?
It's not just open enrollment. Open enrollment is only going to exacerbate the schools that are doing well. And so what we have to do is raise the standards, right? We have to make sure that we provide our teachers the adequate training. A third of our budget in the city of New York, and as well as the state, is invested in schools. We need more state aid coming into our schools. The lottery system was created in the 1960s to invest in our schools. Where is that money?
I don't know. You tell me.
Good question, right? And we have to remember that. Mm-hmm. We have to start inspecting what we expect out of our government, out of our education system. The opportunities to be able to have what is advanced curriculum, dual language, global education. That should be the standard across every school. You wouldn't have segregated school if that was the case, because we would have so much choice, because all the schools are doing well. But when schools are not doing well and they're segregated because you're trying to protect what's yours as a parent until you leave, right? And so the opportunities of learning from one another, what are you doing better that my school can use? Leadership in these schools is critical. If a principal doesn't have vision, doesn't motivate their staff, then and there's conflict in the school, and they're not prepared with the resources of prevention and intervention so that kids are not burning their classroom or biting their teachers.
That's crazy.
Isn't it? Then we know that we're setting a climate of excellence. And I think that is the difference. It's setting a climate of excellence for every school, not just some schools.
Okay, so let's look at the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. We know that New York's healthcare system is filling minorities. We have the highest incidence of diseases and receive less than the best healthcare. The COVID pandemic highlighted these disparities and exaggerated it as well. As a minority and possible future lieutenant governor, what are your plans to address this inequity?
Equity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent question. If we look at what our health indicators, they're in the same communities where we have safety net hospitals. Those are the publicly funded hospitals that are always underfunded. So that's the first order of business. It's funding and investing in the infrastructure that these hospitals need. In the Upper East Side, you have what is a first responding vehicle that in an instance of a stroke can reverse a stroke within the first 72 hours. But you don't find it in Bushwick and Bedford-Stuyvesant, where stroke is the highest indicator in all of the city of New York. Why is it that we don't have the same resource? And so when we think of what are healthcare measures and resources that maintain what is in other communities, people to live longer, we have to learn from that. And then take that model and apply it where it's needed most. My dad suffered from diabetes for 30 years. He was a livery driver. Sedentary work is a killer for diabetic patients. We have to triage, right? We have to triage our healthcare system to function for patients, to be able to access what is dental, vision, primary care, not to use our emergency rooms as their primary doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, medicine is out of control. Our Medicaid, we spend a lot of money on Medicaid to take care of the vulnerable. The problem is, if you're going to receive subpar care through Medicaid and we pay the highest amount of money and we don't see the results, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And so we need to also consider preventative measures, right? Not a phone call, how's your mom? You know, like the opportunities to be able to ask questions. No, there's a need to look at history, medical history. Your medical care has to be coordinated. Coordinated care isn't asking, how are you? It's understanding who are your different doctors and are they talking to one another? Mm-hmm. It's investing in our hospitals so that each hospital has a hospice center so that people understand what end of life is, so that we're not pushing what is life support. If families don't want to see their loved ones continue to remain alive, I had to deal with that with my father. And the opportunity to be able to guide my family, to be able to have hospice, was a process. And in a time of chaos and uncertainty and grieving, right, of a loved one, to have a hospice that's local so that you could be able to travel to be with them, right, that matters.
It does.
And we were lucky because we have one in Bushwick at Wyckoff Hospital. There's only two in Brooklyn. We have 2.6 million people. And Wyckoff Hospital's hospice care is brand new. The other one is in Lutheran, in South Brooklyn, in Sunset Park. And you know the travel, Pearl, in Brooklyn from north to south? That's like a two-hour commute.
Yeah. So let's look at politics right now. This is People Power and Politics. There's always a possibility that you may win and your running mate for governor loses. How do you plan to handle this possibility? Because lieutenant governor race is the hottest race right now.
It is the hottest. It is the most spoken about. I am very confident that the people will vote for a proven leader, a proven executive, people that know to govern, and being an activist is not necessarily how you govern. Tom and I are experienced leaders. We have a very unified approach, right? We want coalitions of people. We want to speak with people. We want people to get involved, to remain involved. This isn't about just a campaign. If we inspect what we expect out of government, it's because we're having conversations, difficult conversations. Our party is not having these conversations about public safety, education, troubled schools, affordability in our state. Why not? We don't have to always agree, but we can't ignore these issues. And being able to run with someone that understands these issues like me is very important. Tom Suozzi and I are running independently, but together, understanding that people will want leadership that know how to govern. The opportunity to be able to ask for people's support to come out and vote Tuesday, June 28th, is our number one priority.
So recently, Brian Benjamin, who was the lieutenant governor, he resigned due to being indicted by the feds on campaign fraud. What are your thoughts and how has this affected your campaign for lieutenant governor?
I think it's affected more Governor Hochul's campaign than mine. She has now a credibility issue, right? How do people trust government when this happened right underneath her? This is her choice as lieutenant governor. This was her vetting process as lieutenant governor. This was her first order of business in the state of New York. She gave Brian Benjamin authority to oversee the budget negotiations, gave him the authority to preside over what would be the Senate, to be able to represent her administration, and you failed to understand that these were pending matters. That speaks volumes of her bad judgment, her leadership, her integrity. How do you restore trust with the public? The odds as far as lieutenant governor for me have risen, but I cannot tell you how saddened it makes me, and I feel for Brian Benjamin's family.
Okay, thank you. So your candidacy, what endorsements and support have you received?
So I have received the endorsement of former Bronx Borough President Fernando Ferrer. Mm-hmm. He's been amazing. He is our campaign chairman. And Fernando Ferrer is a trailblazer. While the Bronx was burning, he's created a renaissance. He was pivotal in that time. I have received what is Councilmember Bob Holden's endorsement, as well as Tom. I received IBEW Local 3, Local 25, Local 1049, UWUA Local 1 and 2, Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, Local 56. And we're working towards DC 37. Mm-hmm. We're working towards 1199. We're working towards UFT. And, you know, peers in government. This is a campaign that welcomes everyone's endorsement. If you believe in what we're talking about, if you want to have a discussion about ideas on how to move our state forward, if you have an opportunity that you think will drive an economic activity in this state so that it could create jobs, if you have an idea to invest in our schools, we welcome that. This is the time. We need everyone involved in this campaign.
Okay, and talking about getting everyone involved, how can one learn more about and support your campaign?
I welcome everyone to come and join us on Twitter. My handle is at Reyna, R-E-Y-N-A, the number 4, N-Y. On Facebook, Diana Reyna, 4 New York, F-O-R-N-Y. And on Instagram, Reyna 4 New York, R-E-Y-N-A-F-O-R-N-Y. This is an opportunity for you to just follow me, follow and volunteer, convey your issues, tell us what's happening in your neighborhood, keep us informed, and let's govern New York State to be the state that we can be proud of.
Okay, great. So finish this sentence for me. My name is Diana Reyna, and I'm running for Lieutenant Governor of New York. The top three reasons to vote for me are...
My name is Diana Reyna, and I am running for Lieutenant Governor of New York. The top three reasons to vote for me are, I'm a proven executive with proven leadership, and I am working on a platform to provide public safety and affordable New York for all, and fix our schools, improving our education system. I am Diana Reyna, and I am running for Lieutenant Governor, and the top three issues are... Public safety, affordability, and education.
Thank you very much. It's such a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope to have you back again.
I look forward to that, Pearl. Thank you so much. And to the family at WVIP 93.5 FM, thank you very much for your warm welcome.
Yeah, always happy to have you. This segment was brought to you courtesy of Caribbean American Weekly, a newspaper owned and operated by Caribbean Americans. Read the latest edition at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To like us on Facebook, to advertise or to subscribe, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To advertise with the Caribbean American Weekly publication, for freelance assignments to distribute at your business place, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. Or to meet a marketing representative at our office, call 718-771-0988. That's 718-771-0988.